Welcome to The Market, sponsored by the CME Group, Dateline, Scottsdale, Arizona, Friday, November 18. Yes, we're back in the desert to have a joyous Thanksgiving Day next week, and we hope you are all planning on doing the same. It has been a week of speculation, but then I guess markets are always speculative, but now with the election of Donald Trump, speculation running wild on who will make up the cabinet, who will be head of the EPA, who will be Secretary of Agriculture, what will happen to trade, and all of that to talk about. As a matter of fact, we're going to visit with Secretary of Agriculture Tom Vilsack just a little bit later in our get-together. And Max Armstrong will be talking markets with Joe Camp of AgriVisor. And we'll join David Lehman of the CME Group to talk about what is going on with the CME Group, particularly the day after the election when they had an all-time volume record. So all of that coming up, and let's begin by taking a look at where we ended today on Wall Street. Stock market, after its ups and downs and setting records in the indices this week, settled a little bit lower today. Healthcare stocks leading the declines. Investors cashed in on the post-election rally, and now we're waiting for clarity on the next happenings in the Trump administration. For the week, the Dow Industrial Average up 0.1%. The S&P 500 gained 0.8%, and the NASDAQ advanced 1.6% for the week. Closing prices today, the Dow Industrial Average down 35 points, and the S&P 500 down 5 points, the NASDAQ Composite down 12 points today. Biggest drag came from technology companies again, such as Alphabet, Google, and drug firms, including Amgen today. But the talk on Wall Street, besides the questions still to be answered by the Trump administration, interest rates. And now the market is pretty well priced in an 83% chance that the Fed will raise interest rates in December. Kansas City Fed Reserve Bank President Esther George said that while she supports raising rates, the central bank must do so only gradually. And St. Louis Fed President James Bullard said today he was leaning towards supporting a December increase and that the real question would be the rate path taken by the Fed in 2017. Those comments simply added to those of Fed Chair Janet Yellen, who testified on Capitol Hill this week. And the Fed Chair said the rate hike could come, quote, relatively soon, end quote. So what's ahead for the week on Wall Street? Well, the earnings reports continue. And some big names this past week, but some big names coming up this coming week as well. And keep in mind now that we're getting into the holiday trading season, which means the market days will be cut. For example, next week, markets will be open as usual on Wednesday. They'll close on Thanksgiving Day, Thursday. They will open at regular opening times on Friday, but commodity markets and Wall Street and most other markets will be closing at noon on Friday. So that means we'll be down to about a 3.5 trading week. Hewlett-Packard Enterprise expected to report an increase in revenue when the software services provider posts fourth quarter results on Tuesday. Federal Open Market Committee issues its minutes from its meeting of November 1 and 2 on Wednesday. And then data next week suggests maybe some weak housing data and some fairly slow business spending. Tuesday, existing home sales expected to drop 0.9% to an annual rate of 5,420,000 units in October. The Commerce Department will report new home sales on Wednesday. Figures for new home sales in October have likely slipped to a seasonally adjusted annual rate of 590,000 units. In addition to the housing reports, durable goods orders will be on the agenda next week. Analysts think that they have likely increased about 1.1% in October, while non-defense capital goods orders, excluding aircraft, a closely watched proxy for business spending plans, forecast to have risen 0.5%. Agriculture and construction equipment maker Deere and Company expected to post lower fourth quarter earnings on Wednesday due to a decline in demand for new machinery. And on average, analysts expect net income for the quarter to be at $122.6 million, with earnings per share at 40 cents at Deere and Company. Dollar Tree, the biggest U.S. discount chain, reports third quarter results on Tuesday. Campbell Soup Company's first quarter sales likely to be pretty much in line with expectations when the world's largest soup maker reports on Tuesday of this week. And one other agribusiness company, Tyson Foods, fourth quarter results are expected to show the benefits of lower costs and its focus on higher margin packaged products. The biggest U.S. meat processor has forecast record profits this year and next, but investors will more than likely be watching out for any comments on allegations of chicken price fixing and some related lawsuits. So those are some of the highlights on the schedule for earnings reports and government reports that could have an impact on Wall Street. But meanwhile, we know the speculation on what it will be like under a Trump administration will continue coming from all sides. Interesting to me, at least every day we get reports things are going well in the transition, things are not going well. We think he'll do this, we think he'll do that. Say, knowing Donald Trump from his campaign, I think we'll find out when he decides we're going to find out. Well, we're going to talk markets with Joe Camp of AgriVisor. Max will be chatting with him. And at the Farm Broadcasters Convention in Kansas City earlier this month, I sat down with David Lehman of the CME Group, and we'll share that visit with you when we continue on the markets, sponsored by the CME Group.
For more than 150 years, CME Group has been built with your confidence. Without it, we simply wouldn't be in business. Today, we continue to work on new and better ways to protect you and grow your confidence in the markets. After all, it's our vigilance that brings you the peace of mind you need today and in the future. CME Group. Advance with confidence.
Dave Lehman is Managing Director of Commodity Research and Product Development for the CME Group, headquartered in Chicago. And before we talk about anything else, Election Day, you had an all-time contract record trade?
The following day, yes, Orion. Yesterday, the day following the election in the U.S., we had a 44.5 million contract day. That beat our previous record of 39 point some million contracts, mostly in our financial markets, in the interest rate and equity markets, but FX as well. We almost doubled our current record, our previous record in Japanese yen, U.S. dollar foreign exchange contracts. So yeah, big day, a lot of uncertainty that the market's trying to understand what the new, the election results, kind of surprising election results meant for the financial markets.
Agricultural contracts traded in that market?
We had a big day in our agricultural markets as well, Orion. We didn't set any records, but the USDA November crop report raised the yields again in corn and soybeans. So as the adage goes, big crops tend to get bigger as we get through the harvest and get more refined estimates out of USDA. So had quite an active day in the agricultural markets as well yesterday.
We have talked several times about the Ag Economy Barometer, but can you bring us up to date on how it's moving?
Yeah, that's an exciting new kind of broad ag economy index, if you will, that we're collaborating with Purdue University to create this Ag Economy Barometer. Purdue is serving 400 producers each month We just had a monthly, the October report came out early this month and showed a decline in producers' sentiment, if you will, or expectations. These kind of track commodity prices, as you can imagine. And as commodity prices have come down due to the big, big crop, producers' expectations for the ag economy have declined as well.
For one who came to Chicago when the mercantile exchange with the butter and egg market, and we weren't even talking about futures and options at that time, but talk to me about options and the role it could play for farmers.
Yeah, that's been a real important new tool, Orion. I came to Chicago Board of Trade in the late 80s, and we had just introduced options at that time. They were previously banned by Congress until about early 1980s. Those tools have expanded. They're really insurance-like products, so they give producers the ability to lock in a floor or a ceiling if you're a consumer, but yet not lose out on a higher price if you're a producer or a lower price if you're a consumer. So what we've been focusing on are refining those tools, giving them weekly expirations that are used to hedge events like crop reports or elections, and then also shorter dated options on new crop futures that give the producer a way to target risk management tools around planting season, pollination season, early harvest season at a lower cost. And in this lower price environment, managing costs is really going to be very important.
I know the CME Group is working on the concern over cattle futures, and it's ongoing. We're continuing.
That work is ongoing, Orion. We're working very closely with the industry, primarily with NCBA, the National Cattlemen's Beef Association working groups, to see if we can make some changes in our contracts. We've done things like taken away the afternoon trading session, introduced livestock contracts into our messaging efficiency program, which monitors the messages that go into our electronic trading platform. Looking at things around price limits, we expanded price limits late last year. So that's ongoing. We're very thankful that the industry is, you know, so willing to work with us to see how we can manage the volatility in that market.
Well, they want that market, but they do have their concerns. So we're a global agriculture. How global is CME Group today?
Well, global is we have global benchmarks, as you know, corn, wheat, soybeans. Those are really viewed and used globally. If you go to China or go to Brazil and ask what the price of soybeans is, they'll quote it as a premium or a discount to CME or CBOT.
Right.
Along that line, we just launched a new European Union wheat contract in September. It's deliverable, physically delivered, around the port of Rouen in northern France, their main export port. Maybe not as relevant to the U.S. market as you might think initially, but it gives the market greater visibility into values in a very large export market, competing export market in the European Union. We're happy we're trading about 2,000 contracts a day and have open interest up at 3,000, 3,200 contracts in just a couple of months. So we're really excited about the initial success there.
So is it companies or producers in Europe that are making use of the market?
It's companies that export wheat out of the European Union. It's co-ops that buy wheat from producers. They're the primary operators of the delivery facilities or the cooperatives, and so we had to work really closely with them and with the French tax and other authorities to make sure they could participate. There are delivery facilities, approved delivery facilities, so yeah, it's a pretty good mix so far.
Any new contracts in the pipeline at CME Group?
There are always new contracts in our pipeline. In terms of cattle, as I think you know, we've said we're looking at that contract top to bottom.
Right.
That may move to an index, a cash-settled index, if we can't get the delivery mechanism modified to better reflect the cash market. We also have some additional wheat contracts that we're looking at, and in some additional option contracts in the corn, soybean, and wheat market that are on our horizon as well, so we'll have to stay tuned for those.
So the one constant at the CME Group is change.
That's a good way to put it, Orion. Yeah, you mentioned the Chicago Butter and Egg Exchange, and when I came to CBOT in the late 80s, You know, we were just beginning to launch options then, so yeah. Things change. The big change, of course, has been the move away from open outcry trading to electronic trading, and the closure of the, you know, the futures pits last year, and options now remain on the floor. So, you know, technology has driven a lot of change, and I think what we'll see in the next 5 to 10 years is probably going to, you know, make what we've seen in the last 5 years pale in comparison.
Well, stay on top of it, and thank you for joining us.
Thank you, Orion. My pleasure to be here today.
Dave Lehman of the CME Group, Chicago.
Joe Kemp from Agrivisor to talk with us this weekend about markets. Is there anything happening now in the wake of that November crop report that had such big numbers?
It's quiet all of a sudden. We're getting into the winter lull, it seems. Not a lot of fresh fundamental news at all. So what we're seeing are the grains moving toward taking on their guidance from first the technicals, what's going on the charts. Somewhat negative in the interim, but ultimately we have seen a good move, a bottoming action out of recent lows. So take some guidance from the charts and then also from these outside markets. Still reacting to the election, still a lot going on with a strong dollar up to decade highs here. That's keeping a lid on commodities and the grains too, but a lot of action outside of our normal supply and demand fundamentals, at least as it relates to the grains.
Was the strengthening of the dollar to the degree that we've seen anticipated, I mean, after the election?
In part, yes, because we are still expecting interest rates to rise, and that goes along with a higher dollar. But in part, no, because what we had expected to see was that if we had a surprise outcome with our election as we did, we could see an initial hammering of that, some loss of confidence, some capital outflows. But instead, what we're seeing now is some optimism over the potential for our U.S. economy, some pro-growth fiscal policy maybe to come out of the new presidential administration. And so we are seeing some money flow into our dollar, not just because of the U.S., but also because of some outside market consideration. Emerging markets not doing quite as well after the presidential election. And also there's some Brexit fears resurfacing, and that's not boding well for the euro and the pound, but it is friendly for our dollar.
Just digressing a little bit, I guess if there was any message that was a consistent one, and there weren't many from the Trump campaign, one was this talk about the infrastructure and his desire, President-elect Trump's desire to spend and spend and spend on infrastructure, which many farmers would probably cheer, because we see what's happening to the highways. We see the need to address the river system. But that, again, is talking about generating economic activity, and maybe that has figured into the strength of the dollar as well?
Yeah, that's a major market impact, the pro-growth fiscal policy that might come out of the new administration, because that can be inflationary. And so what we'll see is if the inflation expectations lead to capital to flow into the commodity space and investors seeking a hedge against said inflation. And also, will heightened inflation expectations maybe put a damper, though, on that dollar long term if we do see inflation rise in a way that kind of counteracts the otherwise friendly dollar motivators that we're seeing?
What is the feeling about how long the dollar could stay strong like this? I mean, is there any lesson to be learned from past events of this nature?
Well, we're seeing an index, a spot dollar index that's back above 100, a level that's not seen since 2003. There is a ways to go before we hit all-time highs, though. So we could continue to see strength as long as we see weakness in the emerging market economies and as long as we see some concern about the economies in Europe. In particular, we'll continue to see some money flow into the U.S. Chasing some of these, optimistic economy storylines. And for that reason, we could still have some dollar strength to go yet.
But if I did the math correctly there, just hearing what you were saying, it's the strongest dollar in 13 years.
That's right. And we could continue to see that rise again because we haven't seen all-time highs. But in 13 years, this is saying something for our commodity space. It says a lot about how we've pursued monetary policy over the past decade and a half. And it says a lot, or it will say a lot, about where our markets are going to travel going forward.
It really makes it a struggle for us to sell against the competition, does it not? Because it makes our grain more expensive.
Yeah, you got it. Exactly that. A stronger dollar makes our goods that we're shipping out less attractive to world buyers because they're more expensive. And if the dollar rises, of course, you're seeing currency pairings on the other side fall. And a lot of those currencies that are falling are in the hands of our major export competitors, say those in South America.
Now, I did see a story this week about Mexican buying of our corn. Now, it had dropped off significantly because of the weakening of the peso versus the dollar. They're right next door to us. Where else would they go for their corn? And they have a very healthy appetite for corn. But, I mean, simply by logistics, with the proximity right next to us, aren't we still, generally speaking, the big game in town for corn sales into Mexico?
Generally speaking, we are the biggest game in town, and we should continue to see Mexico be a good buyer of U.S. corn. They have been the top buyer of U.S. corn over the past couple of seasons, surpassing what is sometimes the top spot for Japan. But we will watch that peso, because if it drops any further, they will have to look to their neighbors in the south to source some grain because of the impediments that the currency terms have. Which right now are leaning negative for the Mexicans wanting to buy our corn.
To the south, you meant Argentina and Brazil?
That's right, yes, our southern neighbors there. And also, in a big way, you can turn to the Black Sea exporters, say Ukraine.
They're quite a ways away, but still, if the exchange allows for that much of a difference, it could still make them competitive, Ukraine with us, even though we're right next to Mexico?
Yeah, you got it with this, the way the currency terms are working here. Again, that's a sort of a last resort thing and not something we'd expect to see. I would expect to see the peso stabilize here in the coming months and so make it so that U.S. corn is still attractive to those buyers south of our border.
For more than 150 years, CME Group has been built with your confidence. Without it, we simply wouldn't be in business. Today, we continue to work on new and better ways to protect you and grow your confidence in the markets. After all, it's our vigilance that brings you the peace of mind you need today and in the future. CME Group. Advance with confidence.
Secretary of Agriculture Tom Vilsack made his final appearance as secretary before the convention of the National Association of Farm Broadcasting in Kansas City earlier this month. One of the questions I put to the secretary was, what is happening now with the Trans-Pacific Trade Partnership?
This is an agreement that I believe is a high standards agreement. There's a lot of conversation and discussion in the country about what trade agreements should be, and I think there is a consensus they should be high standard. I believe this one meets that test in terms of labor and environment and opening markets and reducing tariffs and reducing barriers to U.S. products. I think that there has been significant support for the Trans-Pacific Partnership among those in agriculture. And with good reason, because they recognize that if we are able to complete this agreement, it would reduce barriers significantly, and it would open up market opportunities, and we would sell more. And there are varying estimates as to how much more we would sell, but the most conservative estimate is the one that's in the Farm Bureau analysis, and that indicates somewhere between $4 and $5 billion of additional trade and additional farm income on a yearly basis. So I think it's a high standards agreement, and I think it would be beneficial to agriculture, and I think agriculture has done a very good job within agriculture of making the case that farmers are supportive generally of this agreement. Having said that, I don't know that other aspects of American industry and business have been as aggressive and as proactive. And I think as a result, there has been significant opposition to trade, and I think there is a tendency to sort of confuse trade with globalization. They aren't necessarily the same thing, but in the minds of a lot of people, they are. And it's easy to basically lump them together and to create a sense of anxiety and concern among people because they feel that this may cost them an opportunity or a job.
Tom Vilsack appearing before farm broadcasters in Kansas City for the last time as Secretary of Agriculture. Well, today, a Catalan feed report, and according to analysts I've talked to, no big surprises. The numbers pretty well factored into the trade. So quickly, here are the numbers for the October cattle on feed report. The number of cattle on feed, 10,256,000, and that's unchanged from a year ago. The number of cattle placed on feed during October at 2,171,000, down 5% from a year ago. But the fed cattle marketed during October numbered 1,705,000, and that was up 5% from the numbers a year ago. So, according to analysts, not really a big surprise in that report. I want to spend some time this week talking about a friend that we lost, Dwayne Andreas. He put in 27 years turning Archer Daniels Midland Company in Decatur into the supermarket to the world. He died November 16th in Decatur, Illinois. And a lot of history dying with Dwayne Andreas. I had the interview to, or the opportunity to interview him several times. And when I'd go down to the plant at Decatur and would get there at lunchtime, he'd always make sure we had some soy burgers for lunch because that's one of the food products that he was pioneering. But he was an interesting man because he played the political world on both sides, supporting Republican and Democratic candidates. He was a good friend of Hubert Humphrey, and thanks to him, I had the opportunity to sit in on a meeting in Minneapolis when Mikhail Gorbachev of Russia made his visit to the United States, and I can still vividly recall waiting in the holding room and then going into the meeting room, and when the door behind the stage opened, out comes Mikhail Gorbachev and Dwayne Andreas, arms around each other's shoulders, laughing like they had just enjoyed one of the greatest jokes they'd ever heard. But anyway, Dwayne Andreas was certainly a big name in the world of agriculture and agribusiness, in the world of politics, and in what he was doing and did do for farmers with the processing and the merchandising and the exporting of U.S. grain and soybeans. Dwayne Andreas, 98 years old, passing away this week. We'll talk about speculation and not really knowing anything until it happens. An article in the Huffington Post headlined, Donald Trump's deportation plan could devastate the U.S. farm industry. The story goes on to say President-elect Trump's victory has largely been painted as the result of small-town America rejecting urban elite America, but at least one faction of the nation's rural communities aren't particularly hopeful about the forthcoming administration. And the problem is the pledge to deport or imprison up to 3 million undocumented immigrants who are currently living in the U.S. and have criminal records. The Labor Department estimates that about half of the nation's 2.5 million farm workers are undocumented. It's unclear whether these laborers would be included in the mass deportation plan of Donald Trump. Still, no prominent names coming forth to the forefront in the position of Secretary of Agriculture, so we'll just have to keep on waiting. And in the holiday-shortened week coming up, where do we start Monday? December wheat starts at $4.08 a bushel. The December corn contract will start at $3.82 a bushel. And the January soybean contract will start at $9.93¾ a bushel, with March beans at $10.25. Livestock futures on Monday, the December lean hog contract will start trading $47.80 a hundredweight. December live cattle, $108.32. And January feeder cattle will start the week at $124.97. That's our time for this week. Along with Max Armstrong, I'm Orion Samuelson, thanking you very much for joining us for our weekly get-together on the market, sponsored by the CME Group.